Hi, Allison.
Hi, Max.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Fantastic. Had a good week?
Oh, yeah. You know what I did this week?
What?
Looked at a bunch of exclusive extras on Patreon.
Yes. Did you love all of them?
I loved all of them. I'm trying to get all my friends to go see them because we're pretty hilarious.
We are. We're pretty
funny.
We have
some great bloopers up there.
There's a blooper from last week up there, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So go check that out. Patreon.com/UrsulaMajor.
Check it out.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back to The Bitchery of History.
My name's Max.
I'm Allison.
And this week, I'm going to be talking about Kate Bornstein.
Ooh, I am excited.
Yes.
I am going to be talking about Claire Hollingworth.
Yes. I don't know who that is.
You're going to love it.
Yes. All right. So let's start with a quote. I don't speak for all transsexuals or all transgender people. Certainly, I honor anybody who wants to be a man and does the work of becoming a man. I honor anyone who mindfully becomes a woman. That's cool. But I really don't get how there's only two choices. There's no two of anything else in the entire universe. Why should there be only two genders? I don't get it.
Wow.
So, born March 15th, 1948 in Neptune City, New Jersey. Can
we talk about how cool? Of course she's from Neptune. That's amazing.
Her father was a doctor and she had one younger brother. Her mother kind of broke from the gender role that was expected of her in the 50s by deciding to go back to school and become a teacher around the same time that Kate first started going to school. Kate identifies as non-binary and favors pronouns she, her, they, and their. Kate recounts that as early as kindergarten, she knew she wasn't a, quote, boy. When asked to split up into genders, she went with the girls, but of course was corrected because this was the 1950s. Mm. She studied theater at Brown University, but after graduating college in 1969, she was looking for some kind of spiritual awakening and went around the country visiting different religious institutions.
Mm.
She joined the Church of Scientology
in
1970.
Man.
All right, so she went looking for spirituality and joined a cult. Yeah, that's what it is. She joined them basically at the beginning when the church was first being set up, and she actually became first mate in the Sea Org to founder L. Ron Hubbard. She worked on the giant yacht, which sailed the coasts of Portugal and Morocco. Kate was drawn to Scientology because she was still fighting with and against her gender identity. And they said, you are not your body. You're not your brain. You don't have a soul. You are your own immortal soul. And as an immortal soul, you have no mass, no energy. You don't exist in time or space. Because of all that, she says, I thought, oh, then I wouldn't have a gender.
Right.
So it made sense to her.
Absolutely.
She rose through the ranks even further, becoming a top salesperson, helping to bring $250,000 into the institution.
Whoa.
Then she was accused of being a spy and she was interrogated. Even then, they technically found no wrongdoing, and they gave her the choice between staying in Scientology and being demoted and cheating terribly or being excommunicated. So she chose being excommunicated. She had a daughter while she was a member of the church, and then when she left the church, quote unquote, in 1981, she actually lost contact with her daughter because the church is, the Scientologists are very strict about that kind of thing. Her daughter is now 42 years old and has two children of her own, and Kate has never had contact with any of them. She's never met them or talked to her grandchildren. Kate frequently appears on Caitlyn Jenner's show, I Am Kate, and apparently the two went to the Scientology headquarters in LA to try and see Kate's daughter. But they weren't exactly upfront as to who they were and were denied. In 1986, she decided to have sex confirmation surgery. And even though she transitioned from male to female, she still identified as lesbian after her surgery. She realized that after her surgery, she wasn't exactly comfortable as a woman either. And it wasn't until she moved to San Francisco and became part of the transgender community that she started feeling happy about who she was. She realized that she had a family and it made a huge difference to her. She never came out to her father, who actually died before her surgery. And according to Kate, he was deeply, deeply homophobic and constantly warned that if she ever did anything really bad, quote, getting sex reassignment surgery, that he would, quote, turn his back on her and claim that he never had a child.
Wow.
She did end up telling her mom who didn't understand and told her that she would never call her Catherine, she would never call her Kate, and that she could never come back to her house if she actually went through with the surgery. Mm. And that stood until one day this is a quick story. So there was a really bad storm in New Jersey where Kate's mother lived. And Kate called her mother to make sure that she was okay. And her mom kept calling her Albert and asking how he was in his life and what he was working with. Kate told her mom that she was having a rough time at work because people didn't understand that she wanted to be a woman and were giving her a real hard time. And she started crying and actually hung up the phone on her mother. About 15 minutes later, Kate's mom called her back and said, "Catherine, look, I called to tell you this. No matter how much your world falls apart, and that's what happens, baby, you build a world, it falls apart. But no matter how that happens, you've always got the lovely heart I know you have. And I love you, Catherine. I always will." She also later told her that when she said she was having a rough time at work, she said, "Wait until you actually become a woman."
Oh, oh, it's it hurts on so many levels. Oh, God. Oh. Oh. It's like too real. I feel like I need a minute to process that.
So she, in San Francisco, she lived in the, quote, lesbian community. She was an active participant and actually wrote art reviews for the paper, The Bay Area Reporter. Mm. She has a life partner. Her name is Barbara Carreas, who teaches sex and actually wrote a sex book, which is the first sex book that considers transgendered people.
Wow.
And then Kate herself has written several books as well, most about gender theory, including a book called Gender Outlaw, On Men, Women, and the Rest of Us, and one called Hello, Cruel World, 101 Alternatives to Suicide for Teens, Freaks, and Other Outlaws.
Wow.
Some of her other books, and they all have amazing titles. Here are some of them. Nearly Roadkill, An Infobon Erotic Adventure.
There's an amazing mariachi band happening.
Yeah, there is. My Gender Workbook, How to Become a Real Man, a Real Woman, the Real You, or Something Else Entirely. Gender Outlaws, The Next Generation. This is my favorite. A Queer and Pleasant Danger. The True Story of a Nice Jewish Boy Who Joins the Church of Scientology and Leaves 12 Years Later to Become the Lovely Lady She Is Today.
It's amazing.
A Queer and Pleasant Danger. I feel like that could be the motto for my book. Like, that could be my title. Although I already have it, and I'm not saying it on the podcast because I don't want anyone to steal it from me. And then another one, and this is also a personal favorite. It's called My New Gender Workbook, A Step-by-Step Guide to Achieving World Peace Through Gender Anarchy and Sex Positivity. There was actually a documentary made about her called Kate Bornstein is a Queer and Pleasant Danger that came out in 2014.
Uh-huh.
She currently tours around the U.S., Europe, and Australia, giving talks on college campuses and doing performance pieces about her life and breaking apart the societal norms of gender identity. So it's at this point on the podcast where I feel like I should say that mariachi music you've been hearing is my neighbors, I guess, playing mariachi music. So,
I thought it was a car driving by. Ooh, it's making my eye twitch. Woo!
So for the rest of this podcast, if there's mariachi music happening, those are my neighbors living in Los Angeles. Here's where I'll leave it. So that's Kate Bornstein. She's still alive today, living and going strong. And this is her advice to the LGBT community in the face of Donald Trump.
Mm.
She said, "Well, first, it's important that we all eat and get enough sleep. Really, this is a time of high-level anxiety, and if we are hungry or tired, we will become the effect of bad news and be unable to rise above it. Next, it's important to stay in close touch with each other. Being lonely only ever exacerbates anxiety. Mm. Some of us are going to dive way down into our personal deep holes of fear and anger. The more we hang out with each other, face-to-face or side-by-side, in person, not solely online, the more we'll be able to be there for each other when the abyss yawns in front of us. Mm. This builds trustworthiness, and trust is exactly what's disappearing rapidly during this changing of the guard."
I love it.
That's her. She's an amazing woman. Let's get her on the podcast.
I want to read her books.
I do too. Absolutely.
This sounds so fun.
So tell us about
Claire Hollingworth.
Claire Hollingworth.
So Claire Hollingworth was born October 10th, 1911 in Knighton, England. She was the daughter of Daisy and Albert Hollingworth. Albert took over his father's footwear factory when Claire was small and moved the family to Shepstead, She showed early interest in becoming a writer, which her mother was not a fan of. And her interest in warfare was largely due to her father taking her to visit historical battlefield sites all over Britain and France. Now, upon leaving school, she attended a domestic science college, which she strongly disliked. She became engaged to the son of a family in her hometown, but then she broke this off to work as a secretary for the League of Nations Union. Whoa. After which she then won a scholarship to the UCL School of Slavonic and East European Countries, where she studied Croatian.
Oh my God.
Because, you know, like, then you'll know Croatian. Exactly. So then you'll know it. Now, she began writing articles on a freelance basis for the New Statesman, which was a British political and cultural magazine based in London.
Mm-hmm.
And in June 1939, she was selected to fight the parliamentary seat of Melton for the Labour Party in the general election.
Whoa.
That was due to take place by the end of 1940, but the outbreak of war led to the suspension of elections.
Plans changed.
Mm-hmm. That'll do it. Now, there was this place, this country called Suntenland. It was formerly a part of Germany, Austria. It was kind of incorporated into Germany due to the Munich Agreement in 1938.
Okay.
And Claire went over there after this all happened, went to Warsaw to work with Czech refugees.
Oh, cool.
Because she speaks Croatian.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Between March and July of the following year, 1939, she went back to Germany and then helped to rescue thousands of people from the Nazis by arranging British visas. She still had an old but valid German visa that she'd gotten for a ski vacation. So she was able to enter Germany and shepherd refugees to Poland and then on to safety. And this work earned her the nickname the Scarlet Pimpernel after Baroness Orsky's novel.
Uh-huh.
There's also a movie, I think two movies, based on the novel. She was fired from this position in late 1939, however, because British intelligence felt she was granting visas to too many people who were either politically or ethnically undesirable. Hashtag colonialism. So frustrating. Her work with the refugees led her to coming in contact with and subsequently hired by Arthur Wilson, who was the editor of the Daily Telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
Claire was only working for the Telegraph for a week before she was sent to Poland to cover the worsening tensions in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And once back in the field, she convinced an ex-boyfriend, who was a British consul general at the time, to lend her his chauffeured car so that she could get into Germany for a fact-finding mission without trouble. She recalled later to the Telegraph the following about just sort of crossing the border. She says, quote, "I stopped to buy aspirin and white wine and things you couldn't get inside Poland. And then I was driving back along a valley and there was a Hessian screen up so you couldn't look down into the valley. Suddenly there was a great gust of wind which blew the sacking from its mooring and I looked into the valley and saw scores, if not hundreds, of tanks."
Oh my God, that's so scary.
Mm-hmm. So Claire immediately drives back across and reported what she'd seen to her ex-boyfriend, the British consul general, who then wires the government in London and is like, holy crap, holy crap, problems, problems.
Things are happening.
Hollingworth then just, you know, files her dispatch to the Telegraph reporting Hitler's invasion of Poland, breaking the news of the start of World War II.
Whoa!
She was 27 years old and had been working as a reporter for 3 days.
Yes. All the stories we've done of women fighting in World War II, and now we find out that it was a woman who broke the news.
Her story, which ran without a byline, is often described by the British press as, quote, the scoop of the century.
Yes, seriously.
But it was certainly not the end of her career.
God, I love women, and I love this woman.
I knew you were going to like it. During the post-war decades and years of her life, Hollingworth reported on conflicts in Palestine, Algeria, China, Vietnam. The BBC said that although she was not the first woman war correspondent, quote, her depth of technical, tactical, and strategic insight set her apart.
Amazing.
In 1942, Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery barred female reporters from the front lines in Egypt, so Hollingworth got a credential from an American magazine, Time, so she could continue reporting. In 1946, Hollingworth and her husband, who was a Times of London Middle East reporter, were working 300 yards away when members of an Israeli right-wing paramilitary group bombed the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, which were the offices of the British government in Palestine. They killed 91 people. So they're 300 yards apart. It's craziness. In the 1950s, Hollingworth reported on the Algerian War of Independence. She was present in 1962 when Algerian fighters burst into an Algiers hotel to kidnap an Italian journalist. Finding him absent, they instead just kidnapped a British reporter, John Wallace, and Hollingworth, who stands a mighty 5'3", promptly led a charge to take him back.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I love a mighty 5'3" because yeah. I am going to now refer to myself when people say, how tall are you? I'm going to go, I'm a mighty 5'3". Thank you. You're welcome. Her biggest scoop besides World War II came in 1963 when her acquaintance Kim Philby, a British intelligence agent who worked as a reporter, didn't show up for a dinner party in Beirut. So using port records, Hollingworth determined that Philby had boarded a Soviet ship bound for Odessa. He was a double agent for the Soviets who was defecting. She wrote the story, but her employer at the time, The Guardian, held it, concerned that the account was too explosive. In typical style, what Hollingworth waited until the editor holding the story was out and convinced his deputy to publish it.
Fantastic.
She was appointed The Guardian's defense correspondent in 1963, the first woman in the role.
Doing what she has to.
Oh, yeah. In 1967, she left The Guardian and began contributing to The Telegraph again. Her ambition to work in war zones rather than cover government foreign policy encouraged the move. So she was sent to Vietnam in 1967 to cover the Vietnam War. And she was one of the earliest commentators to predict that the war would end in stalemate. And her reports were also distinguished by her attention to the opinions of the Vietnamese civilians. In 1973, she became the Telegraph's China correspondent, the first since the formation of the People's Republic of China.
Mm-hmm.
She was the last person to interview the Shah of Iran. The journalist John Simpson commented that, quote, she was the only person he wanted to speak to.
Wow.
In 1981, she retired and moved to Hong Kong after also spending some time in Britain, France, mm-hmm. and China. She observed the Tiananmen Square protests from a hotel balcony.
Whoa.
She was married twice in her life, but never had children, preferring to focus on her work, for which she received several accolades throughout her life, including Woman Journalist of the Year for her reporting of the Civil War in Algeria, the James Cameron Award for Journalism in 1994, and in 1999, she received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the UK television program What the Papers Say. In 1982, she was also made an Officer of the Order of the British Empire for services nice. To journalism. She is the coolest!
Yeah, that is absolutely amazing. Claire Hollingworth.
Claire Hollingworth.
The woman who broke
the story of World War II.
World War II.
Can you even imagine? That's no. just crazy.
Imagine that moment when the thing flutters away.
And you're like.
And you just see the masses of tanks.
You just think, oh, shit.
Like, you're probably sitting in the back of that seat with your eyes wide open
it makes,
for the rest of
yeah.
the trip.
It makes me think of that scene in The Two Towers when Aragorn is riding on the horse and he sees all the orcs and you're just like, I just saw my death.
Right.
I know how we're going to die.
Well, I need new pants.
Exactly. Or some aspirin and some white wine. You know, the essentials. The essentials
that's
is what
how
we're
you
getting
know,
here.
That's how you know she's a badass bitch. She stopped before getting to Germany.
I needed
stopped.
Some aspirin and white wine. Duh. Amazing.
Oh my God.
The Bitchery of History is brought to you in partnership with Audible.com. You can start your free trial and get a free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/bitchery. Kate Bornstein's
yes.
books.
Because
there's a couple on Audible.
So on Audible, you can find A Queer and Pleasant Danger. It is written, of course, by Kate Bornstein, who we just talked about, and it's narrated by Alice Rosengard. And this is what it says on Audible mm-hmm. about the book. It's a stunningly original memoir of a nice Jewish boy who joined the Church of Scientology and left 12 years later, ultimately transitioning into a woman.
It sounds fascinating.
I agree.
I'm ready.
I would love to read it.
So again, you can get that at audibletrial.com/bitchery. Hey guys, Allison here. Thanks so much for listening today. Can you do me a quick favor and look down at your phone or your computer, your iPad or your tablet, whatever you're listening on, and just leave us a quick rating or review, because those ratings and reviews help other people find the podcast, which helps us keep doing the podcast. Thanks.
So today in history.
Absolutely. On June 25th, 1678, Elena Cornaro Riscoppia of Venice becomes the first woman awarded a doctorate of philosophy when she graduates from the University of Padua.
Yes.
1678.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
And then on June 25th, 1993, the same day, Kim Campbell becomes the first female prime minister of Canada as the head of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Amazing.
Progressive Conservative Party. We need one of those.
Also on June 25th, 1993, Tansu Çiller becomes the first and to date only female prime minister of Turkey.
Yes. This month has been, in our Today's in History, has been big on suffrage mm-hmm. and on female prime ministers.
Yeah. Politicians.
Absolutely.
So our term of the week, I thought we could talk about this term, gender fluid.
Yes.
Because I just came across it. I've mm-hmm. been scouring the internet looking at crowdfunding campaigns.
Okay.
And I came across a documentary that was seeking funding that was about a gender fluid child.
Okay.
And while I feel that I'm fairly well informed about some LGBTQ
right.
things from knowing you and just living in LA and
right.
it's 2017 and,
right.
you know.
Get with the picture.
Life.
Right.
I had not yet heard the term gender fluid,
yeah.
so I looked it up,
okay.
and this is essentially the definition. This is
yeah.
what they say, they, the internet. It's also sometimes called gender queer or
yep.
non-binary, and
mm-hmm.
it's just a catch-all category for gender identities that are not exclusively masculine or feminine. Identities which are just sort of outside of this binary.
Mm-hmm.
Genderqueer people may identify as one or more of the following: having an overlap or indefinite lines between gender identities, having two or more genders, having no gender, moving between genders, or being third gender or other gender, a category which include those who do not place a name to their gender.
Right. You know how we constantly say gender is a spectrum,
mm-hmm.
sexuality is a spectrum.
Yes.
Gender queer people are the embodiment of that. Gender fluid people are the embodiment of that.
That's a really smart way to put it. Very easy to visualize.
I have several friends who live their lives acknowledging themselves and identifying themselves as being gender queer.
Mm.
And a lot of the times they ask to be referred to as they
mm-hmm.
or in other non-specific
right.
terms. Or, I mean, just like with anyone else who might be queer in some way, you just ask what their pronouns are. And a lot of the genderqueer people that I know, and of course my experiences are not representative of all experiences, a lot of the genderqueer people I know move fairly easily between being a man one day or a
mm-hmm.
woman one day or something in between, maybe a mixture of the two.
Right.
There's this big post that went viral
mm-hmm.
about rompers and rompers for men.
Yeah.
And people are calling them rompims. This is coming out of the queer community, I think, and essentially it's coming in the gender queer community. The gender fluid community really right now are the vanguard of dismantling the binary system
right.
at the moment. Because if you live your entire life as someone as saying, look, I don't want to be a boy or a girl all the time, just like Kate Bornstein
right.
said, why does there have to be two?
Why do I have to decide?
Exactly.
You know, it's a topic that sometimes I don't have, I guess I have difficulty identifying with
sure,
because it's not
fair.
Relatable to my experience. But it did just make me think of, I'm an actor,
mm-hmm.
and when people ask me if I want to do comedy or drama, and I just go,
can I do both? Right.
I'm good at both.
Yeah.
Why do I have to choose?
Yeah.
So if you're like me and it seems a concept that's a little far outside your range, I challenge you to find something relatable to you so that you can
Agreed.
have sort of an understanding
Agreed.
And a respect for other people's decisions.
Agreed. And I would also challenge you to change the idea that sexuality has to be something that is on a different level than, or sexual preference or gender preference has to be something that is more important than what kind of acting you want to do.
Yes.
Whether you like boys or girls, or whether you are a boy or a girl or something in between or both at the same time or whatever you want to be, literally, why does anyone care other than the person who that
yeah.
gender affects?
Absolutely. Cool.
All right. So our cause for the week
is the National Women's History Museum, which is at nwhm.org.
Yeah, the museum researches, collects, and exhibits the contributions of women to the social, cultural, economic, and political life of our nation in a context of world history. And I chose this to be our cause for this week because it feels like they're doing what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So they also, they use innovative and engaging means, including permanent and online exhibits, educational programs, and outreach efforts to communicate the breadth of women's experiences and accomplishments to the widest possible audience. The sharing of this knowledge will illuminate and encourage women and men, people of all classes, races, and cultures to move into the future with respect, equal confidence, greater partnership, and opportunity. I kind of just want to copy and paste this into all of our social media stuff.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. And again, you can find them at
nwhm.org.
Fantastic.
The Bitchery of History is a production of Ursula Major Productions, brought to you by a fantastic production team.
Yes. Jeanette.
Kim.
Ashley.
Olivia.
Sydney.
Steph.
Dan.
And our new intern,
Vic.
You can also always find us on all our social media sites at UMPBOH, even a website, umpboh.com, or on Facebook, just search The Bitchery of History.
Don't forget, for just a couple dollars a podcast, even just $1 a day, you can help us make this podcast happen, and you can join the conversation on our behind-the-scenes contributors blog at patreon.com/UrsulaMajor.
And don't forget...
Bitches get stuff done.